What is up? It is the 3&D podcast. I am your host, Justin Lewis. You can find us on Twitter at 3&D Pod. You can find the podcast with the Grizzly Bear Blues family of podcasts that include GBB Live, the Core 4 podcast, and the Starting Five. Check us out wherever you check all of your podcasts at. You can find Grizzly Bear Blues on Twitter at SBN Grizzlies or at grizzlybearblues.com. And you can find me at J_Timberfake_. I'm a little frazzled. I've gone from basketball practice to picking up the baby from daycare and then heading straight home to hop on here. So just bear with me. We have an exciting episode. But first, before I introduce our guests, I need to give some I just need to say something, and we'll kind of dive into a little bit more. I was lied to, deceived, bamboozled for the most of my teenage years, thinking that Buffalo Wild Wings was the best place to get wings. And then I was introduced to places like Ching's and Crumpy's and Chicken Coop and Olive Branch and then Wing Guru. And I've just been brought to the light that Memphis has just a bunch of great wing places, and Buffalo Wild Wings and Wingstop are not on the list, either one of them. And so that's our topic tonight, is going to be wings. And joining me to talk about wings is none other than Paco Flocka Flame. What's up,
Wow, Paco? Even with the ham, the little ham horn too. I've never had an intro like that before. And I appreciate you having me on the show. I know I'm not as esteemed as some of the guests that you've had on the show, but we're here and ready to talk about some wings.
Parker, you know, I mentioned it today. Like, I wouldn't move you. Like, I prestige you as one of my top guests. I wouldn't move you for somebody else. There are people that I've had on that I've actually have moved around, and there's people that I would move around based on getting a better guest. But there was no chance of anybody coming on, like I said, unless it was like Adam Silver, of moving you tonight. So don't be so humble.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I feel like Adam Silver, John Morant, one of them can have my spot if it meant getting them on the show. It's all good. I'm just ready to talk about some wings.
So let's just talk about chicken wings real quick, and then we'll jump into Grizzly Wings after that. Like, what's your top place when it comes to wings?
Ooh, okay. So one thing I'll agree with you on is Buffalo Wild Wings is completely and utterly such trash and a disgrace to the name of wings. One, because of the price, because it's essentially warmed up microwave Tyson nuggets or microwaved wings, pretty much with some sauce on it. Takes forever. It's overpriced. The experience of it really is also kind of overhyped too. I'm not honestly much of a wing connoisseur as I wish I was, just because I haven't really been around many of the places. Because, I mean, for one, I didn't go to college in Memphis. I went to Ole Miss at Hotty Toddy, I know. And, I mean, I live like 45 minutes away from all the good wing places. Working out in Caryville while also living out in Caryville, it just makes it really hard to go find time to go get some good wings. So if you are listening to this podcast, make sure you hit me with some good recommendations of Memphis wings. I will say right now that the best wings in Memphis belong to the Wing Guru. They have that Triple J flavor with the honey hot with this 901 seasoning, and is complete gas. It is some of the best wings I've had. Actually, the best wings I've had for sure. If I know another good low-key place to go get wings is Booyah's out in Caryville. Shout out to my pal, Alec Kupaszewski. And I will say, a good spot in Oxford used to be, Justin, I don't know if you're familiar with this place, but Frank and Marley's. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not.
Oh, so it's now called Harrison's, but they used to do this deal when it was Frank and Marley's every Thursday with $2 pitchers and 50-cent wings.
Oh, wow.
And it was always the move. So I would probably have those at number two behind the Wing Guru. I think the wing guru is the Tom Brady of Memphis wings, per se. I think it's the GOAT.
For sure. And they're so new on the scene, and they took over it. And the thing about the Memphis wing scene is, like, it's been good for a long time, and for the wing guru to just hop in these last few years and just catapult to the top is really impressive. And I will say one thing about the experience of Buffalo Wild Wings. When it was first around, like, it was legit. All these TVs, you go in there, you have a beer, you watch all these games. You got, you know, the half-off wings or the half-off boneless wings, whatever night it was. And they would show the fights on Saturday night. So, like, the experience was worth it at the time. But now it's just kind of overplayed. They don't do the paid fights as much anymore. And other places have kind of caught on to that method and taken it away. So now it's like, if you're going to go, it's for the food, but you wouldn't go there for the food. So, I mean, if you're in Memphis, I know I've missed some places other than Crumpy's and Ching's. And in tomorrow's article that I have talking about wings, I actually list some of the top places in Memphis. But if I miss some, or there's a place that, you know, that we need to try, do hit us up and let us know, and we would definitely go and try them and possibly even endorse them. But, like, let's transition from the food wings, which is one of my favorite foods, to the position on the court, which is the wing. And that's more, you know, been a term used more frequently lately because of Parker's beloved transition to positionless basketball. And the piece that I have coming out is kind of where we want to talk about, because we both have some really deep thoughts on this, and that is the depth at the wing position for the Memphis Grizzlies. And I'll argue that this is perhaps one of the deepest years of wing talent that the Grizzlies have ever had. Now, I do say that this is not a top-heavy talented group, because the Rudy Gay years and with him and O.J. Mayo, there's more talent on the top end of that. Even the years with Mike Miller and James Posey, those were more talented at the top end. But as far as going deep on the roster, we're like 7 or 8 guys deep that are playable at the wing position. And going into this season, we've got 2 different scenarios where at the beginning, we're not going to have Winslow or Jaren Jackson Jr. So we're going to have to use that wing depth early. But the question becomes, when we're healthy, who are the guys that are going to see the floor? So that's kind of what we're going to dive into tonight. Parker, do you think this is one of our deeper wing classes? And if not, I know you mentioned 2 earlier. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say it's been pretty nice. It's a pretty nice one. I would say this is probably the deepest wing core the Grizzlies have had since the Grizzlies have traded away Rudy Gay. I think the wing core behind Tony Allen in those last years of grit and grind were kind of sad, especially considering that really probably the best small forward the Grizzlies have had since Rudy Gay was probably James Ennis or Kyle Anderson, who is really more of a 4. I would say I think it's the most intriguing for sure. I would say the best wing core the Grizzlies had was around that 2003-2004 stretch, and then going into 2004-2005, when the Grizzlies wing core was Shane Battier, James Posey, Mike Miller, and Bonzi Wells. I think those guys were all ahead of their time in terms of what they brought to the floor. I know you brought up the positionless basketball and my infatuation with it. Those are 4 guys that could stretch across the 2 through 4, defend multiple positions, shoot threes. I think their numbers would have been inflated a little more if they would have been in the modern NBA and had played in this pace and space 3-point predicated system that has become the NBA. But I will say that this one is certainly interesting because you have a multitude of guys, young guys per se, that could theoretically play roles on the next great Grizzlies team, whether that's Justice Winslow or obviously the re-signing of D'Anthony Melton kind of indicates that he will be there. And I mean, I know this kind of pains you to say, but Dylan Brooks as well, even if it's as a 7th or 8th man, having him as your 7th or 8th man is very good. And there's also, I mean, Desmond Bane, who was on the top 20 on a lot of draft boards. And then Grayson Allen, who I'm writing about tomorrow, who had a very nice shooting performance in the NBA bubble. It's going to be interesting to see how that translates over to a more normal NBA setting. But I'm very intrigued indeed by the wing rotation that is going to be in place next season.
All right, so I pulled up that 03-04 Grizzlies roster, and you know, obviously, based on the time, they use a lot more roster spots on what you would consider to be bigs back then. But you're looking at best five deep, but that top four is very good with Mike Miller and Shane Battier, James Posey, and Bonzi Wells. Like, you would take that top four wing rotation in today's NBA over most teams in their depth. And then even with Mike Miller and Shane Battier, they're both 6'8". Like, they could have played a stretch four and done it beautifully. And then the fifth guy on that one, you had Dante Jones in his rookie year. I think that would have been another, you know, that's your five, because the guys after that is Theron Smith. Like, who is that? Wesley Person. He was, I guess, serviceable. But that was it.
Person was traded for Bonzi Wells in the beginning of that season. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're five deep there, and you're looking at the Grizzlies roster today and the guys that you have on there. You're right. As much as I don't like Dylan Brooks, he is a nice seventh or eighth. Like, and then I've always said, like, I take him as seventh or eighth guy on a roster. So when you look at that and you can say that he's your seventh or eighth best player, or not, maybe not best player, but seventh, eighth guy in the rotation, you take that all day long. So the dilemma going forward now is, where does Winslow fit in? What kind of system is Jenkins really looking at with him? Is he going to be is he a guy that's a candidate to come off the bench and run the four and let Clark run the five? But now that you take Tillman, you would think less of that being the case. I would imagine that the ideal starting lineup when you're healthy would be Morant, Dylan Brooks, and Justice Winslow, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Jonas Valanciunas. And then the second unit, you know, you love Tyus Jones, De'Anthony Melton, and Brandon Clark together. So then it comes down to, is Tillman going to play the five, or is Clark going to play the five? And if Clark plays the five, who is going to run the small ball four there? I would lean towards Tillman's going to play the five, Clark's going to play the four, and then you've got that, who's that next guy at the three to make it 10 deep? So like, you've got nine guys in the rotation right now. And that's not including Grayson Allen. That's not including Kyle Anderson. It's not including Desmond Bane. And it's not including John Conchar, who just signed his contract. So where do you find the minutes in a healthy team for guys like Grayson Allen, Desmond Bane? Because starting the year out, they're going to get to play, because we're not going to have Winslow at the beginning and Jackson Jr. So let's just start with this. Starting the year, let's just assume that Kyle Anderson is going to be our starting four. Would you say that's fair?
I think that's fair, yeah.
All right, so you've got Dylan Brooks starting there, and then you've got that three spot. Who is Parker Fleming, head coach Parker Fleming, starting between Kyle Anderson and Dylan Brooks on the wing?
Theoretically, like, you want to start Desmond Bane. And he has that great prototypical size for the NBA wing. He's a good secondary playmaker who's filling what you lost or are losing with Justice Winslow. He's also a freaking flamethrower from deep. So adding another lights out shooter next to John Morant's always nice. I don't know, though, if he's a guy that's going to start camp, condense preseason, and somebody that was on that roster last year. And I'll credit Brandon Abraham, GBB associate editor, for that. I can totally see them starting either De'Anthony Melton or Grayson Allen. Worth noting that that's stretched towards the end of the year, like before the suspension, when you had no Jaren, no Justice, or no Clark. They rolled with John Morant, De'Anthony Melton, Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson, and Jonas Valanciunas. And I can very well see that being the starting lineup on opening night. A while back, I pulled up his splits from when he's a starter. De'Anthony Melton shot about 37, 38% as a starter from deep. So maybe put him in more situations where he doesn't have to create for himself, and where he's also getting gravity shifted away from him with guys like John Morant, Jonas Valanciunas. Hey, I know you hate to hear it, Dylan Brooks. But I think that could be very beneficial. But also, as you noted, we love the Tyus, D'Anthony, and Clark connection off that bench. And it's honestly going to get even stronger with Xavier Tillman as the backup five. But don't discount Grayson Allen potentially making his way into that starting lineup on opening night, especially with the injuries that we are looking at to start the season. I mean, in the bubble, he was probably the second most important perimeter player behind John Morant because it was simple. He was making shots. And I know that coach and front office, they like Grayson Allen, as could be seen when he was playing those early minutes ahead of De'Anthony Melton, even though Grayson hadn't found his rhythm from three yet. But I think it kind of goes back to your point of, for the Grizzlies, they have so many different options from the wing. And I think either starting Bane, Melton, or Grayson in that two or three spot, they can't really go wrong there.
Yeah, and I would caution to people about De'Anthony Melton and the recency bias. You know, the last look we got at him wasn't a great one, but people need to remember that Tyus Jones was out and he was relied upon to be something that he's not. And that was – he was a primary playmaker for a secondary unit. And he that's not where he's going to thrive. And I agree, if he's in the starting lineup, he has the least amount of pressure on him that he's going to have at any point on the basketball floor, because he is the fifth option on that team. He's going to get the open looks. He's going to be able to focus on the perimeter defense, which he excels at. And he can be a secondary playmaker next to Ja and not have all that pressure on him. As far as who I would start as a coach, there is the thought that Jenkins doesn't want to roll out somebody on a shortened preseason that isn't familiar with what they're doing. But what a time to learn for Desmond Bane than to just roll him out there and let him go, because this is the approach that I think I would take as a coach. I know I'm getting Jaren back. I know that I'm getting Justice back. It's not like there are season-ending injuries already. I'm not tanking. I want to build this going forward. So I want to keep Melton and Tyus and Brandon Clark as a unit together. So, like, for me, Melton is out. But the problem becomes with starting Bane at this point is when Winslow comes back, he is going to go out of the starting lineup. But what kind of confidence can you give a kid by putting him out there with the starters and then getting the open shots that John Morant is going to create for him? And Dylan Brooks does have some gravity, so he's going to get, you know, open shots because of that as well. I think you could do a lot by instilling some confidence in the young man early by starting him. I like the idea of Grayson Allen being on the second unit with Melton. But again, I'm an Allen lover, so if he comes out there and he's the starter next to Dylan Brooks, like, you're not losing too much in size at that point. He's 6'4", Brooks is 6'7", Desmond Bane is 6'6". So, like, it is what it is on that. But, like, the size difference between Melton and Bane is a massive difference, and I just don't know how small you necessarily want to get, because the NBA is moving to, like, starting point guards are 6'7" on every team now. So size is playing a little bit of a factor in my decision. But let's talk about when we're healthy. Kyle Anderson is now booted out of the starting lineup for Jaren Jackson Jr. Let's assume that Winslow is the starting three. You got Tyus, Melton, Clark, and I'd say Tillman are probably non-negotiables in the second unit. So you've got And I'll throw this in there. Parker brought this to my attention earlier. Jenkins likes to run an 11-man rotation. So you've got two spots essentially for Kyle Anderson, Desmond Bain, Grayson Allen, John Conchar. Who gets those two spots and who gets the 10th spot? Like, who do you – like, rank them. We'll do it like this. Let's do 10, 11, 12, and 13. Rank your Allen, Bain, Anderson, and Conchar on the wing 10 through 13.
So I'm going to go ahead and start by saying I think Conch will be 12th. Big Conchar guy – or 13th. You said 13th. I think he'll be the 13th guy. I think he'll be more of an insurance policy for if there's any guys that go down with injury. Or I did also say to you prior to this conversation, I don't know if the Grizzlies will necessarily have a fully healthy team at any point in the season. And I'm not saying that with any sort of insight or anything. I just think with this season and the shortened off season, and also, too, with the corona stuff going on and the fact that you're not in the NBA bubble anymore, I'm going to be very surprised if the Grizzlies have a fully healthy team at some point. Also, too, it's the Memphis Grizzlies. They're never fully healthy. And I would probably put a giant asterisk based off what we know and also, too, how the outside shots are looking. I'm going to go ahead and sharpie in Desmond Bane at that 10 spot because I think his shot's legit, and I think it's going to take a lot also for him to not be in the rotation, especially the investment that they have into him when they traded up from nothing into the first round with a couple of second-round picks to go get him. If Kyle Anderson – he's shooting the ball well and with volume. Let's just say hypothetically it's even like 33% on two or three attempts a game. Given what else he brings to the table in terms of a multi-positional defender, excellent secondary playmaker, and strong committee rebounder, I don't see him out of the rotation. And also, too, you know what that does, too, is that boosts his trade value for whenever – he becomes an expiring contract in 2021, 2022. And I think with Grayson, as I'm highlighting in this piece, yes, he had the bubble and he had a strong December stretch both months where he shot very high 40% from three. He also did in those injury-riddled months of that October, November stretch and that January stretch, he didn't necessarily shoot the ball well. He was like sub 30% from three. So it's kind of like what Grayson Allen you're going to get. If it's the one that's shooting 43, 44, 45%, you cannot take him out of the rotation. And I think that would push Kyle Anderson out. So I would put a giant asterisk because of the three-point percentages and the volume. And I'll go Bane, Grayson, Kyle, and Conchar.
So what I'm hearing – is this 10th spot is really going to be on who's shooting the ball well.
Correct, yeah.
And I agree with Anderson. Like, he brings a lot with his rebounding, his defense, his playmaking. And if he can spread the floor, like, it would be hard to keep him out of the rotation. I think he's going to have a chance to really showcase his trade value starting. This is just what's nuts to me is how many players are going to be a starter for a guy who's injured, a fill-in starter, but then when that guy comes back, possibly be out of the rotation. Like, how many guys fit that mold in the league? Like, hey, yeah, we're going to plug you in and start you, but when he comes back, you're not going to play at all. You may not play at all. And that may not be the case with Kyle. Coach may like Kyle and keep him in the rotation, but, like, for me, I'm going to spot start him because he fits. But then he doesn't fit when Jaren comes back. Like, am I crazy for thinking that?
I mean, no. I mean, and also, too, you have a lot of cases where guys that shouldn't really be starting or are in NBA rotations, that they had to start because of a multitude of injuries. But it is very unique because there are only two notable injuries with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Justice Winslow. And it's also a testament to Kyle's game, both the strengths and the downfalls. But I really think like he can be a great, not a great, but good NBA four because of what I just said of everything he does. Think about it as like a skinnier Boris Diaw in a way. He could be that kind of guy. Now, those guys are valuable in today's league. I think he can potentially go somewhere else and be a very reliable contributor, even to a very strong playoff team. I mean, when Kawhi Leonard was out that last season in San Antonio, you know, that was a whole debacle. Kyle Anderson was the starting small forward on a very good San Antonio Spurs team. So it's just very unique because of the spot the Grizzlies are in and the system that they're running predicated on three-point shooting, pace, space, and just overall just a lot of quick actions. I mean, you see a lot of drive and kick. You see a lot of three-point shootings, fast break triples. I know it probably drives you crazy from watching the basketball in the 90s, but like with Kyle Anderson, he's just a very unique case, and it kind of makes him unique as a role player because of how good he is at what he does, but it's masked by the fact that he doesn't shoot the ball well slash at all. He's kind of like the middle-class Ben Simmons in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the overall skill set is similar. Obviously, not to the superstar level that Simmons is at.
Yeah, that middle class.
Yeah. With Kyle, like you brought up, this offense is a system where there's quick decisions that happen, and like he's one of those guys that like you trust his quick decisions, and that's why he would be valuable on the floor. It's just that he's not quick himself, number one, and his shot's not even quick. Like he shoots the ball like a sloth. And he showed a little bit more willingness last year. And then the hitch that you and I had noticed his first year over when he had the shoulder problem, his hitch was kind of gone last year as well. So who knows? But maybe we see, you know, an improved – and we thought we saw an improved Kyle Anderson three-point shooter, but it was just a kind of an anomaly last season. Like, you want somebody with his IQ, and you're right, like the Boris Diaw type. He's a guy that can probably play for a long time. You're going to look up in 10 years, and he's still going to be on the NBA roster as that, you know, vet that keeps getting signed to these teams. Like, he would have been good for Portland last year. I think he would have been good with the Lakers this upcoming year. Like, there's plenty of teams where he'd be an excellent fit. It's just for the Grizzlies and what they're trying to do and the athleticism that they've acquired, like, he just doesn't fit. So it's going to be interesting to see what Jenkins does with that rotation. Like, obviously early, all these guys are going to get run because of the injuries. And like you said, you know, Grizzlies' history with injuries, there's a, you know, pretty good chance that that's going to continue, which, knock on wood, we hope it doesn't. But the interesting one for me really is Grayson Allen, because he does have the purest shot on the team. His form is the most repeatable. And with being a consistent shooter in the NBA, like, you've got to have the most repeatable, like, shot form, mechanics. Like, Klay Thompson is Klay Thompson because everything he does is simple. Steph Curry is Steph Curry because he's simple. It's repeatable. And Grayson Allen is simple and repeatable. But the thing is, like, Grayson's not just a shooter either. He's also a three-level scorer. They can put the ball on the floor. He can be a secondary playmaker. And he plays his ass off, man. Like, Grayson Allen is a straight-up baller and has to, just absolutely has to be in this rotation. Maybe it comes at the expense of lowering Brooks's minutes to make him more efficient with what he does. Like, I argue with Bane being in the starting lineup because defensively he can give maybe Brooks a break on defense so that Brooks doesn't have to feel like, oh, I've got to guard LeBron or James Harden and then turn around and I got to drop 30 tonight for us to win. Like, if we can get away from that, I'm okay with Dylan Brooks. And I think maybe Bane allows that to happen. But maybe Grayson Allen does too, because if you remember in the bubble, like, he was switching and guarding fours, and he was not getting murdered on it. Like, dude is just a hard-nosed player that I hope that we sign to an extension. But, like, could he possibly be the odd man out going forward? Like, based on contracts and what we have on the roster currently, is Allen the one that's going to be showcased as a trade piece?
I mean, you just don't know. because the Grizzlies can go in so many different directions with the collection of assets that they have in their disposal, as well as, I mean, going forward, starting this season, the Grizzlies are going to have their draft capital back because they don't owe any future first-round picks. It's going to be interesting. As we just said, it comes down to the shot. One thing I do like with Grayson, obviously you did point out his how he just he works his tail off on the defensive end of the court despite his physical limitations in terms of size for the prototypical wing. But I really like his decision-making on the offensive end in terms of he doesn't really make any mistakes. He doesn't force anything. But also, too, his shot portfolio is, like, ideal for the NBA role player. It's literally threes or in the paint. And he actually finishes pretty well in the paint. I think he shot, like, upwards of 70% at the rim. That's pretty strong for a 6'3 combo guard. So I'm rooting for him to find a way into the long-term plans for the Memphis Grizzlies, obviously. He's a player that instead of an extension, I would kind of monitor like a restricted free agency, similar to like what they did with D'Anthony Melton this season, just see what the value is looking like for him and just go from there. But I think it's just a testament to the collection of assets, both tangible in the form of players and intangible in the form of draft capital that the Grizzlies have at their disposal and the multitude of directions it can go from here.
What are the chances that we see any Sean McDermott minutes?
Oh, man. So, Sean, I don't think he gets any minutes this year. But I did read up an article where somebody derived a stat comparing players to Duncan Robinson. And he was the player with the highest score. I think they called it Debo because, like, that's Duncan Robinson's nickname. And he had the highest Debo score of any player in this draft class and the seventh highest this decade. I don't think he gets minutes this year, but I would keep an eye out. The college numbers aren't really that promising, but I also did read up on something where he was battling like a very serious staph infection in college. So, I mean, obviously that's going to put a huge dent into your playing career and your production stuff, but I'm rooting for, I mean, not even just Sean McDermott. I mean, you also have like Killian Tilly as well. I mean, the Zach Kleiman and Jason Wexler, they just done a tremendous job of just extracting value and finding talent at whatever avenue they have.
Yeah, up and down this roster is just, there's just intrigue all the way through. Like, you're not looking at the bottom of the roster and you're just like, oh, this dude's just a contract filler, or like, this dude's dead weight. Like, you're excited to see every dude on the roster. Except, I mean, obviously, we're expecting the trio of Gorgui Dieng and Mario Hezonja and Marco Guduric. Like, two of those three are going to be gone. I think they keep Dieng because he's Jonas Valanciunas insurance early. He's a matching expiring contract later in the year as well. But, like, if you take away Guduric and Hezonja, this is one of the more interesting and exciting rosters that the Grizzlies have ever had. You're right. It's a testament to the front office. Like, it's just nuts how much of a 180 it is from, like, 3 years ago where we were just miserable every offseason because Chris Wallace was doing this and doing that, and there was no trust. And I think that's something that you mentioned earlier today in a conversation too, is like, there's trust here. And there's trust that the front office, you know, is making the right moves and they're building that trust. And I'm just excited to see what happens. So, like, let's talk about the preseason. The Grizzlies have four games. They have two against Atlanta and two against Minnesota, which geographically doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But what do you think we're going to see in the preseason with it being a shortened preseason? The offseason's short. You're not contending this year. So are we going to roll our starters out there to get some run in, to get ready to go for the season? Are we going to try to use this time to get looks at guys like McDermott and Tilly and Porter and all that? Or what are your expectations for the preseason games?
I don't really know, to be honest, just because of how unprecedented this is. I want to go back to one quick thing that you had said, something about like how there's so much intrigue on this team and it's one of the most fun teams in a while. It's one of those things that the Grizzlies they're already ahead of schedule and there are really no expectations. I mean, we had this whole thing of expectations in the grind, in the grit and grind era, wanting a NBA championship, and it didn't really happen. And also too, just the Grizzlies holding on too long to that grit and grind. Granted, paid off, but I think that played a part into that as well. But in terms of what I want to see in preseason, is I just kind of want to see some experimentation beyond what to do without Winslow or Jaren Jackson Jr. Now that you have these other weapons at your disposal, maybe see who works best as your backup five between Porter and Tillman and Jing. I don't want to discount Jing. He did have a nice little stretch of run there before the shutdown, but I mean, the bubble, I mean, it kind of showed where he is in the Grizzlies hierarchy because they're playing a smaller Brandon Clark at the five over Dang, who's a near seven-footer. He can protect the rim extremely well. I would also like them to kind of see what they have in that little comp. I don't even know if it's going to be a competition because they could both be the guys out, but just see what you have from Marco Guterich and Mario Hezonja. I'm not advocating at all for them to get minutes or to have mainstay roles or that they can be on the next great Grizzlies team, but it's worth a shot. I mean, you brought Guterich over because he shot 45% from three in Europe, and Mario Hezonja is nice in theory. He's 6'8", has that top five draft pedigree, and he just has that prototypical size for the three and the four. He's also an athlete. I mean, he can rise up and dunk on anyone's head at any moment, including Giannis Antetokounmpo.
He's always been nice in theory, right?
It's just always been nice in theory. So just see what you can get from those guys, because what if you have kind of like a Solomon Hill case from last year where, I remember, we all thought Plumlee was going to take that final spot over Hill, and Hill showed value, and the Grizzlies had to pivot on their decision and cut bait with Miles Plumlee. And we've seen the Grizzlies willingly take on dead money, as we see with Plumlee and Deion Waiters. So, I mean, if Hezonja and Guterich show something, then you got to do what you got to do, whether it's making a tough cut with Gorgui Dieng, $17 million, or finding a trade to trim down a roster spot. I think it's going to be go down to Guterich and Hezonja, but I really do kind of want to see in the preseason those end of the roster battles, not just in terms of that cuts that we were talking about with those three players, but also just the positional battles, especially between like Tillman and Porter.
Right. And I think I don't know why I didn't think about it, but you don't have to cut these guys until after the preseason game. So you do get a chance to look at them. And I mean, let's be honest, nobody's expecting Guterich to do anything. So like, we're all on the same page. Like, this guy's gone. But I think Hezonja is an interesting one. Like, what if he does ball out in the preseason, and with his athleticism and the shooting profile that he's not really lived up to yet, like, what if a Grizzlies coaching staff member figures something out with Hezonja and then he just balls out, you know? So, like, that is something that I would be interested in watching too. Of course, the low-end battle of the roster, but also, like, I want to see Desmond Bain play, man. Like, what – I mean, I don't know. I don't want to see Ja Morant go out there and get 30 minutes a game in the preseason and risk getting hurt for the season. Like, to me – and this is something that can be talked about at a later time – like, this season is what it's going to be. Like, they're not going to rush Jaren back for a you know, third-year season, a couple years outside of your contending window. Let the dude get healthy. He's going to have load management as well when he comes back, probably. Like, I think they're going to have a sneaky tank, but not do it where you're losing games on the floor. Like, it's going to be – we're going to manage some stuff. We're going to get us a good draft pick in this upcoming draft that's absolutely stacked. We're going to get that next piece. The next free agency class is awesome. And then we're going to press the issue next season. Like, I don't know. I mean, is that realistic?
Sure. I mean, it's realistic. Yeah. I mean, I've chronicled the 2021 offseason plenty of times through the deep draft class and also the free agency class, aka Duncan Robinson, OG Anunoby, Josh Hart. So I think it's going to be really fun. You mentioned the small tank. I mean, even like I said, I trust the front office to make the right call wherever they're getting value. Even if they make the playoffs and they get like the 16th, 17th pick, I trust them to extract the most value from that pick as possible.
And I'm at that point now too. Like they've shown it. Brandon Clark in the 20s, Desmond Bain at 30, Xavier Tillman in the 35. And you can find the Kawhi Leonards at 15. You know, those guys are out there. Mm-hmm. Giannis was at 15. So like you can land in that range. You just don't want to live in that range for years at a time. Like you want to hit one time and roll. And I think the Grizzlies aren't far from that. Well, again, if you have any wing suggestions of places to go eat in Memphis, Parker lives there currently. Send it to him. If you're listening in the Jackson, Mississippi area and have some wing suggestions, hit me up with them. Parker, anything you want to add before we hop off here?
No, I just want to thank you for having me on and thank you for the great work with the 3D podcast. It's almost time for the season, so I'm really excited to get rolling here, start season two, covering the team. And yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that I hadn't had Parker on the 3D yet, and I didn't have a guest lined up this week, and it was a perfect fit. Parker is the person that had me on my first podcast ever. I remember being at his house with Brandon Abraham and Connor Dunning, and we did a podcast, and I was nervous as could be over at his house. I looked at these three guys like they were pros, man. I was shaking, I was nervous. So I appreciate all the opportunities that Parker's provided me with. He's going to do big things here at GBB, and I've always told him that he could go past here, but he loves Memphis, so I don't know if he's looking to do that. Parker, I hope you guys have a great night doing your Christmas stuff, and I'll holler at you later, man.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this has been another episode of the 3D Podcast. Make sure you check out the other podcasts in the Grizzly Bear Blues family of podcasts. Until next time.